Welcome to the first committee meeting in the new Max Gruenberg Committee Room. Isn't that exciting? We're the first one. This is House Fisheries Committee Meeting, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. The meeting will come to order at 10:03. That's pretty exciting. Members present, Representative Ortiz, Representative Millett, Representative Heron, and myself, Chair Stutes. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum for business, although we will just be taking testimony today. Oh, and we have Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, sorry for my tardiness.
No problem. Glad you're here. We're also joined by Kelly Burnett from House Records, Matt Kern from the LIO, and of course my trusty fisheries aide, Reed Harris. Today's the fourth hearing on House Bill 251, Electronic Tax Returns and Fishery Taxes. We will be taking public testimony, and I will now open it up for public testimony. Do we have anyone here who would like to testify in the room? Have you signed up? Okay, let's see here. Richie Davis? Okay. Please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee, and thanks for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 251. I'm Richie Davis, resident of Juneau, Alaska, here, 45-year continuous commercial fisherman here in southeast Alaska, and I'm representing Seafood Producers Cooperative. Today, Seafood Producers Cooperative is 650 business owner fishermen who collectively catch, process, and market their seafood products through a cold storage that we purchased 25 years ago and have paid for in Sitka, Alaska. The co-op began in 1944 as an outfit that fished a collection of fishermen who produced fish liver for the government to use in light lubricating oil in the Second World War. We've been around since then. We're the largest and the oldest currently operating fish co-op of its kind in North America. Most of the fishermen I represent are residents. We have 650 commercial fishermen members of the co-op who range from California to Alaska, but 400 of them are Alaskan residents, small business owners, producers of seafood products here in Alaska. Last year, our association paid $800,000 to the state's general fund in the fisheries business tax, and we average about $750,000 a year for the last 10 years. The tax is significant for our fishermen. Very soon, the state needs to see, or we would like to see from the state, a comprehensive tax package with all the figures included in it to tell us exactly, based on whatever amount of income tax we would have to pay, whatever amount of foregone permanent fund dividend we would have to leave behind, which sources of money the state is going to use to fill the large fiscal gap, and based on that, subtract from it the need further needs to balance the state's budget and see where we fit in. We are not interested in circling back to regulatory bodies, lawmaking bodies, or policymakers to lay the checkbook on the altar of taxation again. This should be a one-shot deal for the state here. Our overall debt won't be settled by an additional fisheries business tax. All the resource extractions in the state together cannot produce the kind of tax money the state needs to bridge its fiscal gap today. Depending on who you talk to and what conversation you enter into a dialogue with, the fishing tax, the fisheries business tax is significant. 1% is significant to us, or to somebody else it may not be that significant, but it's certainly not sufficient to bring us close to what we need to break even or get to what Lieutenant Governor Millett calls ground zero fiscal situation. Allowing for or combining with any or all possible impositions upon Alaska's commercial fishing industry, the sum of tax dollars that we could extract are not significant. They are significant to us, although significant to us, not sufficient, not even close. We must know what our part in the equation for this resolution to the state's economy is, and we know it's going to be tough. I could sell to my fishermen the idea of a tax, and we could buy into it if we didn't have to face cuts to the Department of Fish and Game's budget at the same time. If there were only cuts to the Department of Fish and Game's budget and we got to keep the tax money that is being contemplated as an extraction from our industry, we could possibly partner with the state in the fish and game to make sure that the data, the information, and the management principles are in place to keep this beautiful sustained yield fishery that Alaska embarks on every year. It's one of the shining stars or gems that we have to show the rest of the world. It would be a shame to cripple it without having a good thought process and a good interface between the fishing industry and the policymakers of the state before we add any additional taxes to it. This tax proposal, coupled with the 15% cuts to the Department of Fish and Game, reveals two distinct likelihoods for the people I represent. They're very simple folks. First, the proponent or advocates of these measures are either absent of anything close to a thorough understanding of the dynamics of the financial condition or the social conditions of Alaska's commercial fishery. Something's missing there. Otherwise, the other possibility is that somebody is using Alaska's fiscal crisis as the springboard to destabilize or cripple our industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative Christ Tompkins. Representative Johnson?
Thank you. And this is more of a statement to address yours than it is a question, if I might, Madam Chair. I've had several people in my office in the last couple of days saying they don't want to be singled out and that they want to see a comprehensive plan go forward. This is the first step in that comprehensive plan process. You'll see that instead of taking everything to finance, which we've typically done with tax bills and are all rolled into one big bill, and you would have probably 3 minutes to testify one time, that we have assigned these individual taxes to the policy committees that oversee those policies. And we're reviewing the policy of whether or not this is a good idea. All of this will be melded into the finance committee, and you will see your comprehensive the effects of the comprehensive, who's doing what, when they're all melded together, if they survive. So this is not, we're not singling anyone out, and there's been some misconceptions about that. Like I said, I've had two different groups in my office saying, don't single us out. When I explain the process, what this has done is given you a better opportunity, the people in this room a better opportunity to come forward and to testify so that we as a legislator and we as policymakers can better understand those impacts. So we are doing exactly what you've asked. It just may not seem that way when you're in a single meeting targeting a single tax, because these meetings are going around all over the building. I sit on resources where we're doing mining tax, we're doing oil taxes, there is in transportation, there's a fuel tax. So we're evaluating the policy. So all of these will be melded together to address exactly what you've asked for. And there's some little misunderstanding about that, and I want to be very clear that that's what we're doing, and giving your clients and your constituency an opportunity to have more input, and quite frankly, to have legislators to understand better. We'll have 40 legislators that have at least seen some kind of tax bill before it gets to finance, where it would have been 11 before. So we're educating ourselves, we're educating the public, we're being educated by you, and so we are doing exactly what you want. Now, the merits of the tax, that's a different issue. The money of the tax will be dealt with in finance. We're dealing with a policy, but we are doing a comprehensive look, and no one is standing alone in this. So I just want to be very clear on that. There has been some misunderstandings about that, and I just want to make sure that everyone knows that we're not singling out a single entity. They will all be merged together at some point, and then that comprehensive look at what it does will take place in the Finance Committee, which is the appropriate body for that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson, which I would like to add to that, which is why we're in no hurry to move this bill out of fisheries. We want to make sure that we have the input from all the user groups and all the individuals and companies and corporations that are going to be affected. We want to make sure there's ample time to hear your concerns so we can forward them on when we forward this bill. Are there any other questions for Mr. Davis? Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The governor and the executive branch has proposed this legislation, and in testimony both in this committee and other committees, the staff for the governor has said that they had conversations with individual constituencies. Did you have those conversations with the executive branch?
Madam Chair, Representative Herron, the last conversation I had with the executive branch was last June in Fairbanks at a consortium or a user group of Alaskans that were brought together by the governor to mine through the budget to see what savings we could find that were overlooked or possibly missed by somebody else that had taken a good, close, microscopic look at it, and then the second day go through the different sources of revenue that the state has to try to bridge the fiscal gap. And that group of people agreed at the time in our discussions with the staffers from the, well, there were commissioners from a variety of agencies there. There were legislators there. There was a good cross-section of people from the state that the different, the folks that are involved in resource extractions and the folks that were involved with the tourist industry, we could point a lot of fingers at each other if we wanted to and eat up a bunch of time doing that. But that since the crisis was larger than all of us put together, the relationship we had with the governor at the time and his staff was to work closely with the rest of the folks at that in that exercise and determine where the large pots of money were and not to insist that some competitive user group or some other user group outside of ourselves was going to be responsible for that. My fishermen have no illusion that we're going to be part of the solution, and we're willing to do that. But where we are weakened is that we're not sure if we offer ourselves here a 1% increase into the from the fisheries business tax to the bodies here in this building, that we won't be called again because we are so pliable or we're compliant and willing to enter into a discussion with that issue and to give up tax money. We're not interested in having to return here again with somebody who says, you know what, I didn't get you hard enough the first time, or I didn't pull enough money out of your industry the first time. It's obvious to me, or I have a reason to believe that there's more hidden there that I can get, and that is what we are trying to avoid. Thank you.
One follow-up, please.
Follow-up, Representative Herron.
Thank you. Thank you. So a lot of people disagree with the 1%, and this committee is taking a real hard look at it. And like the rules chairman said, that this committee will make its recommendations, but the finance committee will probably determine if 1% is appropriate. Would there be an A number that you could support, like 25% of a 1% increase, or is it what you want is no increase?
Madam Chairman, Representative Herron, there probably is a number we could arrive at. It would have to be determined by an interface and really intense discussion over all the factors that are involved in the value of each of the different fish and each of the different products that the processors and the fishermen of the state produce. We could arrive at something, I'm sure. It would be much easier. I would tell you definitively, yes, if I did not have to look at a crippled Department of Fish and Game and know that my gardener's been shot in the leg.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on that most recent comment that you made, and you, of course, spoke about the cuts to Fish and Game earlier in your speech. Can you tell me a little bit about how you see the impact of those cuts that were seen both last year and potentially this year impact your particular industry, and tell us a little bit more about what that might mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Ortiz, I could speculate in a dozen different directions over what the reluctance or the inability of the Department of Fish and Game to conduct research and population surveys and assessments of different stock sizes would have as an impact on the fishery. If they cannot fly the airplane because of fiscal constraints, if they cannot do the test fishery because of fiscal constraints, or on the other hand have to conduct a test fishery to make money in order to determine whether there are fish there, that all takes time for the department, and it leaves a gap in the ordinary production or the ordinary prosecution of the fisheries. They'll have to take place after the department takes the extra time it needs now that it's short-staffed and short-funded to come up with the determinations whether or not those volumes of fish exist for us to catch. That's one of the drawbacks to having a reduced budget, is that the department we're going to be unable to partner with the department because of the additional tax that we have to pay. If we had only cuts to the department and we were here looking at in the Capitol building saying, okay, there is no chance that we're going to have to return back here again, a 1% fisheries business tax may be doable, we can partner with the state over that one and probably keep the Department of Fish and Game afloat, but there's no guarantee that they don't have to come back in and next year, and even reduce further. And there's no guarantee that we don't have to show back up again because of a gap or some not reaching a goal that the state has with our portion in it being sufficient enough to have to tax ourselves again. The department has a tremendous amount of data that it has to gather for us in order to effectively prosecute fisheries. We are dealing with lower prices on some fish products than we had 10 years ago. Yesterday, the folks in the Department of Public Safety said increase the amount of fines and fees that you get for violations based on the cost that we've incurred over the last 10 years in trying to get people through the court system based on the value of the fish after 10 years. I'll submit to you that I'm selling fish for less than I sold them for 10 years ago. Why would I want to pay twice the amount of fines for a violation? It doesn't really make a lot of sense because we're not running parallel in the fiscal world. The folks that don't have to make a living with resources don't see the ups and downs from 1 year, one decade to the next, or the how the factors in the environment bear on the sheer volume of fish that you could catch 1 year and the absence of them the next. We're very fortunate in this state that we have an annual activity that we can go back to and hold up for the rest of the world and show them that this is managed the way we think it should be. It's sustainable. It's a real picture of economic health for the state. We don't want to damage it. Yes, we're going to be part of it, the solution. We're glad that you folks are allowing us to make testimony here, and we're going to help. But we want to be invited to that process.
We thank you very much, and we thank you very much for your testimony today. We appreciate it. And next, we have Scott File, and we're going to limit testimony to 3 minutes. We have quite a few people that would online that would like to testify as well, so I'd appreciate it if you could limit it to 3 minutes. Thank you. Please state your name and your affiliation for the record.
My name is Scott File. Here I'm on my own behalf as a commercial fisherman, 45 years. After listening to the last testimony, maybe my condition isn't quite so bad. I'll try to make it real brief. Yesterday we went to our accountant to explain how we broke even last year. The year before we lost money. This year we'll probably lose money again. Me and my wife are trying to figure out whether we should stay in this industry or not. Keep in mind, I've been doing this for 45 years. The conditions of this fishery, I don't know if you guys are aware of. I fish black cod, halibut, and salmon on a 58-foot seine boat. These should be premier fisheries. A lot of effort's gone into these fisheries to keep them stable. 1986, I believe, the quota for black cod was around 40,000 tons. This year, it's going to be around 9. A halibut quota has been cut 11 years in a row. This year, it's gone up in some areas, except for one, the one I'm in, 3A. Salmon prices for pinks could be down as much as 75% since 2013. I heard rumors of 8 to 10 cents a pound this year. These cuts across the board, these are very huge cuts. You know, at a time when our living expenses are at an all-time high. I wanted to paint a picture for you guys, you know, what's been going on in my household for the last 3 decades. This is nothing new. The 80s, 90s, early 2000s, Ward's Cove got out of the industry for salmon. They just couldn't make a go of it. I believe 30% of the fishermen that in the state of Alaska were left without a market. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. Let's see here. Fish and oil are kind of the same. The abundance of oil and the price go up and down, you guys know. So fishermen are kind of going through the same things that you know, the state of Alaska is right now. Trying to make this as brief as I can.
Great. If you could sum it up, we'd appreciate it.
I will sum it up right here, right now. Do we take money from families in a recession? No. I believe we are in a recession in the state. Do I believe that the state has cut enough? I don't think so. Will people lose their jobs? Yes. Will people suffer? Yes. Will the cost of this government here in the state dictate how we live our lives? Yes. I think the state needs to cut more. I don't want to see the state end up like our federal government.
Thank you.
That's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. File. Do we have any questions for Mr. File from this committee? Seeing none, we appreciate you. Oh, yes. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Scott, what's your perspective on, as far as cutting cuts to ADF and G?
Well, if we do it in a responsible manner where it doesn't create problems with the... you know, the fish itself. I don't know how far you can go with that. I know they've been cutting it quite a bit lately, but I know you guys have to look into each and every nook and cranny that you can. It's a good question.
Follow up?
I'm just curious if you know, having fished commercially for decades, if you know, we're in the position, several members of this committee are also on the ADF and G finance subcommittee, if you know, given the harsh fiscal environment that we're in, the necessity for cuts, if there's a way where you see cuts that don't affect fishermen, don't affect Fish County, and create a more conservative than necessary management. So if there are cuts out there that wouldn't create those negative impacts ultimately on fishermen that you perceive?
I don't think it would hurt me per se more than what's going on already, what I just told you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Right. Thank you.
We next have Chris from Icicle Seafoods, and if you would state your first and last name. You notice I didn't attempt your last name. And your affiliation, please.
It just looks hard.
I was going to say nurse.
I'm Chris Norris. Excuse me. I'm representing Icicle Seafoods. We have 5 land plants and 3 floating processors. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I appreciate the fact that this bill has had several hearings. I think we've all benefited by the presentations from the Department of Revenue and the discussions that have ensued. We certainly understand the challenges and difficulties we face as Alaskans with the state's current fiscal situation, and we do wish to work together with you to be part of the solution. As always, the devil's in the details. And we're concerned that there likely hasn't been quite enough analysis on the impacts of the proposed action. But probably more importantly, there needs to be more time to determine if there's a better approach to raising the funds needed to bridge the gap between the revenues coming in and the costs associated with fish and game management and research without being unduly detrimental to the industry. Canned salmon can likely not take an increase in the tax rate. It's already at 4.5%, which is higher than fresh or frozen products, and is not an increase that we can easily pass on to the consumer. I'm not exactly certain how we got to this multi-tiered tax rate for our industry, but I do know that in times of large run strength, as we saw in Bristol Bay and Prince William Sound this past summer, that canning salmon is a critical component to handling large salmon harvests because it can absorb a very high volume. We simply don't have the cold storage and transportation capacity and infrastructure to handle all of the salmon that is harvested in a short period of time and have it go out as fresh and frozen product. So I really don't feel like now is the time to raise the tax on canned salmon. In the past 2 years, the seafood industry has had to grapple with a $2 increase in the minimum hourly wage and a strong dollar on the world market that has made it considerably challenging conditions to keep salmon as a desirable and affordable commodity that can compete with other protein sources. Unlike some of the other natural resource industries, the fishery resources are a renewable resource that will continue to provide revenues as long as the runs stay healthy and are managed properly as mandated by our Constitution for the use for future generations. It can continue to generate revenue for state municipalities and continue to drive the state's economy into perpetuity. I appreciate that the bill directs any new revenues collected as a result of raising the fisheries tax rate to go directly to the state. I'd feel more comfortable if we had some assurance that the funds would be used to cover the costs for fisheries management. If the fish and game budget is cut to such a degree that we're unable to adequately manage the fisheries, then we all lose. It will result in foregone harvest opportunities that will lead to a loss in revenue to the state and to the municipalities, lost wages and jobs, and a downward push on the state's economic vitality. I appreciated Representative Johnson's comments about the fact that we shouldn't be fearful about this being done in a piecemeal fashion and that the legislature is looking at this in a comprehensive manner. I think that was really important to hear from you, and I appreciate those comments. I just want to say in closing that we understand that it takes all of us contributing in a variety of fashions to make this all work, and that we really do wish to work with you to find a solution that we can all live with and that will address the fiscal gap. Thanks for the
Thank
opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Millett, please.
Good morning, Chris. Good to see you. So I have a question. Have you seen a change in the way Fish and Game has managed the resource? Have you seen a negative effect over the last couple of years, or has it been status quo with the management style of Fish and Game? Has there been a with the budget reductions that they've taken, have you seen any?
I think with cuts, Representative Millett through the chair, I think with cuts at Fish and Game, it's hard not to manage a little more conservatively if you feel like you have less data to go on. I think that we've seen some changes in test fishing. I worked for Fish and Game actually for 10 years, and that was back, in the 80s, late 70s, and there was a whole lot more field work going on then to reassure that what we thought was going on was actually what was going on in the streams. There was a lot more flights being done to check on salmon escapement and things like that. So I don't know that I'm really qualified to say that we've gotten our techniques better so we don't need as much on the ground checking or not. But I do know that normally when people have fewer data points, they tend to manage a little more conservatively.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Mill.
And Chris, have you seen any data from the administration on what effects it will have on canned salmon or the tax? I mean, have you looked at it and had an opportunity to see the impacts of the increase in tax on the fisheries?
I've seen some data, and through the chair, Representative Millett, I guess what I'm concerned with, realizing that we have lots of different fishery products, that the one that sticks out to me that's least able to afford a change in tax rate is canned salmon. But like I said, I think it's worth us all working together to figure out if there's a different structure that might get us to where we need to go. I'm not convinced it's this particular one.
Thank you. Representative Herron.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, good to see you again. You mentioned it. You worked a while back in for Fish and Game. You must have been a teenager.
I love you.
Oh, man.
So, Madam Chair,
I agree.
Follow-up, Representative Herron.
Madam Chair, just to let a lot of people know that probably don't realize it, but Chris did serve on the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission because of her expertise. There's 10 legislators and 16 Alaskans, and she was one of the experts that served on that commission. But, Chris, the question is that maybe unfairly in another committee a question was posed to the administration. When you met behind closed doors, did you get out a dart and a dartboard to find out what was going to be the tax increase? But the testimony was is that they did work with the industry, whatever industry, whatever tax we're talking about. Did the administration come to you and seek your input?
Representative Herron, through the chair, no, they did not specifically come to me or anyone at our company that I'm aware of. But there's a lot of players in this industry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Oh, excuse me. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thanks, Chair Stutes. I guess maybe a follow-up from Representative Millett's line of questioning and certainly your testimony. Why is it, or what are the market dynamics that lead you to say that canned salmon and the current taxation on canned salmon is maybe least able to absorb a tax increase relative to non-canned salmon fisheries taxes?
Representative Christ Tompkins, through the chair, there's probably a lot of people in this room that are better qualified to answer that question. There's a lot of gentlemen behind me that have sold a heck of a lot of canned salmon. But I guess I would say, put simply, that canned salmon is probably the highest priced canned food there is. And that in a retail situation, price is critical because we're competing with so many other protein sources. And so if there is any money to be made, it's going to go to the retailer. We need them to make a bit of money on it to move it, and we've got large volumes at various years to move. It's really price sensitive. It's the backbone of the industry, and it's what bails us out when we have big runs.
Follow up?
A couple follow ups. What percentage of icicles gross does canned product, or just ballpark, to get a sense of the role canned salmon plays in terms of the products that come out of, say, your processor?
Representative Christ Tompkins, through the chair, you know, I'm going to have to get back with you because I can't think of it off the top of my head.
If you could provide that information to the chair, we'll disseminate it.
I'm sorry.
One more?
And just one other question. We've gotten some correspondence from people in the industry, and I'm Rhonda Hubbard, Cruise Off Fisheries, also Petersburg Connection, although presently of Seward, sent an email, and I just figured might as well spitball some of the ideas that have been, you know, suggested from the public and from the industry. And, you know, one of the questions is developing fisheries, and you've got this differential sort of different tax for developing fisheries versus developed fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, from your perspective, is there a lot of value in having that lower tax rate for developing fisheries? And I think the subtext of that question is it's maybe been suggested by members of the public or the industry that there's just like way more hassle and paperwork and trying to break out whatever money you make off a developing fishery versus developed fishery, that if you just had a flat tax across the board for developing and developed fisheries, it might just be easier in terms of administration. Do you have any perspective on that?
Representative Christ Tompkins, through the chair, I really haven't given that one much thought, but I will and get back to you.
Thank you. And Chris, thank you for your testimony. I neglected to mention earlier that we have Deputy Commissioner Kevin Brooks here from the Department of Fish and Game, and we also have Commissioner Ken Alper, Director. Excuse me, from Department of Revenue, the director. Let me get that clear. Thank you. Excuse me, director. And we have no. Do we have anyone else here that would like to testify? If not, we will go to our online individuals, and we'll take them as they called in, earliest being the first to testify, and that will be Walt Pasternak from Sitka. Are you there, Walt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Walt Pasternak. I've been a commercial fisherman here in Southeast since 1975. I can't say that I like taxes, but they are a necessary part of funding government. I pay my raw fish tax. The fishermen here in Sitka contribute $2.6 million a year in raw fish tax. Half of it goes to the state, and the rest comes back to the city that funds the harbor department. I also pay marketing tax to ASME, a 3% aquaculture tax to raise fish, 3% IFQ tax to pay for the federal program that manages our halibut and black cod, and a 1% observer tax to help pay for having a body on my boat to watch me fish. I've opted out for that program, and I've been set up with four different cameras to keep an eye on me. Not to mention the 5% sales tax that I pay here in Sitka, and it's 6% in the summer. Here in Sitka, we've gathered signatures about 10 years ago to pass a citizens' initiative to place a $10 box tax on chartered caught fish. It generates about $120,000 a year. It's a volunteer program, so it's not 100%, but a third of those fees go to pay for the harbor, a third goes to pay Aquaculture Association, and a third goes to the local Marine Science Center. You know, I ask for some kind of resource extraction tax on our commercial charter fleet we have in town here. If that could be considered, I know it's not going to solve any of the problems that the state's facing, but I ask you to at least consider that, and everybody needs to pay a little bit to of their revenue to help the state through this tough situation. I'm sure the price of oil will come up, but we all need to stay in business while that goes on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Just in response, this committee is aware that there's a whole charter fleet out there that is not being taxed in any capacity, and it has been and will be addressed, but it will be aside from the governor's fish tax bill. Does anyone have from this committee have any questions for Mr. Pasternak? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony. And we have Mike Svensson there in Sitka as well.
Yeah, morning. My name is Mike Svensson, and I just want to make a comment on the on this new fishery tax and how it came about. You know, I read the article in the Juneau Empire about how some of the governor's people and top fish and game officials got together and just figured out a tax. Like, fish and game are now professionals and how much people should pay in taxes. This is the reason why fishermen were concerned and against putting CFEC into ADF&G, which the governor, like a king, just made it so. When did Fish and Game become tax professionals? I feel comfortable just having you guys in the majority figure this out, not ADF&G. Like I said, we are nervous about ADF&G, what they could do to limit entry. Limited injury always followed the rules and didn't act like they know everything. ADF&G thinks they're the only ones who know anything. And I have been told by fish and game officials that since I didn't go to college, what do I know? So I think the majority, maybe with the governor, should set tax rates, not ADF&G. We didn't vote for the commissioner of fish and game to set tax rates. And, you know, if you watch the public channels, you'll see that a lot of the documentaries on there, they always get funds from Fish and Game.
Mr. Svensson, excuse me for interrupting you, but if you'd like to testify in relation to House Bill 251, we'd love to hear your testimony. But this isn't a critiquing of the department at this time of Fish and Game.
Okay. But Fish and Game could quit giving away all their
Mr. Svensson, I'm not going to remind you again. If you'd like to testify on House Bill 251, we'd love to hear your testimony.
Okay. That's all then.
Thank you. And we have John Murray in Sitka.
Yeah, hello, John Murray, Sitka resident and fisherman. You covered most of my what I was going to say when you addressed the charter boat, charter business industry possibly having a, looking at a tax on them. I was hoping it would be, it could be amended or addressed through this, this bill, but if this isn't the right vehicle, that's fine. And I just wanted to thank the committee for the good questions to the people that have made comments so far, and Richie Davis for his good perspective. So you sort of covered mine, and just wanted to know, did you get my email from yesterday?
We did, and we thank you for it.
Yeah, well, appreciate the time, and yeah, it's you pretty much covered what I had to say. Thank you.
Uh-huh, and your email is, in fact, part of the packet that has been provided to this committee. So we appreciate your testimony. We will go now to the Cordova LIO, Sean Gilman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Sean Gilman. I'm testifying for myself as a commercial fisherman and small business owner. I'd like to thank you, the committee members, and the chair for this opportunity to comment on the proposed taxes. I've lived in Cordova for 40-plus years and worked throughout the state of Alaska. I've listened to the budget conversation as best I can and want to state some basic truths that seem to be getting lost in the conversation in Juneau. First and foremost is that no matter what your occupation or vocation, everyone is using Alaska as a resource to make a living. An income tax would capture all resource income derived, no matter if one was an oil field worker from Louisiana, a fish guide from Colorado, a tourist worker from Maine, or a commercial fisherman from Washington, as well as all Alaskans, including yourselves, the legislature. So the focus on the resource industry taxes, while a valid discussion, has been hijacked with a few false premises derived from the ICER report, as I see it, which somehow overlooked completely commercial fishing sales tax contribution to the state, while giving tourism a complete credit for sales tax. It also disingenuously divorces the municipal share as not being state income. I guarantee that communities not receiving a municipal share receive as much or more state funds in other ways. It leaves out any cost of the marine highway to tourism and doesn't actually get into the management cost of mining over the long term. I'm not wanting to disparage anyone. I just wish for an honest discussion when potentially increasing taxes on the three industries mentioned in the report and the need of honest representation of each industry's contribution. ICER and many pundits don't account for the renewable nature of Alaska's fish resources when coming up with tax rates. Alaska has a subsistence priority for its residents. This is the true access and ownership tax on this resource. After accounting for subsistence and escapement requirements, the sport, commercial sport, and commercial fisheries take place, harvesting the excess, if there is any. The resource is still there year to year and actually healthier when managed this way. It's amazing stuff, really. Being on the school board in Cordova for 6 years, I have seen how tough it is to cut budgets and how to look how one looks to increase fees to cover costs. I also saw how difficult it is to tackle actual cuts in programs and bloated administration with assistant and coordinator positions being the first that should go. Instead, the first few rounds of cuts are usually throwing up items that are needed and wanted by the public versus the expanded administration that is a natural progression of governments historically. So anyway, please keep this in mind while moving forward and consider the governor's proposal as a basic framework of even-handed fairness to address the $3.5 billion gorilla. So thank you, Representative Stutes, for the opportunity to comment and for your leadership in fair consideration moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Gilman, and we appreciate your testimony. And I'd like to take this opportunity to acknowledge that Representative Foster has joined us as well. Nice to have you. Are there any questions here for Mr. Gilman from this committee? Okay, seeing none, we will go to the Dillingham LIO. And we have Diane Wetter. Oh, they don't want to testify. Oh, okay. Then let's move on to the Homer LIO. Nancy Hillstrand?
Yes, hello. This is Nancy Hillstrand. I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. We're a corporation in Alaska and have been for 52 years. And we've been serving the local fishermen since 1959. Fish are a public trust. It belongs to all Alaskans. So we totally do agree with this 1% tax. We do agree with a flat tax across the board for all. And we also agree with the accountability within the state to utilize this money fairly and honorably for the people of Alaska who own these fish. I would like to also see that we stop subsidizing hatcheries. If you look in the ICER report, you'll see on some of the line items that some of that bloat is definitely coming from these hatcheries. And these hatcheries just serve a very small segment of hatchery fishermen at the expense of our wild fishermen and wild fish. There's a lot of problems with hatcheries, and I think we're doing damage, and I hope that we can do some sort of a cost analysis on hatcheries and also a cost analysis on the operating budget within ADF&G that serves these nonprofit aquaculture needs, because it takes away from taking care of our wild fish, which is the reason why the original Hatchery Act was created to protect our wild fish, and I don't think we're doing that right now. I think we're going against that. Icicle Seafoods just mentioned that they have a glut of fish. Well, that glut of fish, a lot of that comes from hatchery fish, a very low-quality, low-valued fish that I think we need to look into that, and we need to start taking care of our more high-quality fish, our shellfish, not by throwing, starting other hatcheries, but by protecting the habitat, protecting, the management that protects the fish, and getting away from this aquaculture regime that we've created over the last 40 years. A lot of these fish also are going to China. A third of all pink salmon go to China to be value-added over there, so we're losing jobs. I don't know how those folks are being taxed, but if it's a floating processor, I think that should be even more of a higher tax, because I really don't feel that we should be ruining our markets by sending fish over to China and processing them and sending them back as wild Alaska salmon. I think it's giving us a real black eye, and will eventually if there's some problem within that. I've heard that sometimes they are putting in the sodium polyphosphate.
Okay, excuse me, Ms. Hillstrand. I'm going to kind of direct you back to House Bill 251, please.
For self-determination, to cease living off the shirt tails of non-diversified industries, and I believe that the fishing industry needs to pay their way, and as I said before, through the 1% tax, I'm all for that, and I really thank you very much for taking my testimony.
We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions from this committee for Ms. Hillstrand? Okay, seeing none, we will go to the Petersburg LIO. Mark Roberts.
Yeah, this is Mark Roberts. I'm a trawler. And I just wanted to emphasize what Scott was mentioning, that, last year I had the worst year that I ever had in my life. And also, I really feel that this year is going to be the same thing. So with the taxes, I really think it would hurt us. Now, I also want to bring up Mrs. Miller, or Millett, excuse me if I pronounce your name wrong, but she said something to Chris Norris about Department of Fish and Game. Will it hurt I mean, has it hurt us yet? The answer to that, for me, the answer is that is no. But if you do take any more taxes out, I think it would really hurt our hatchery openings, and it would really hurt our summer fishery. So I just wanted to bring that part back up, that and stuff. And again, I just wanted to bring up that, you know, I really feel that this is going to be another bad year for us. And last year, a lot of us had a really bad year, and I think the taxes would hurt us even more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Is there anyone from this committee that has a question for Mr. Roberts? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Roberts. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify, or anyone else in this room? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public test. Oh, you'd like to testify? Please, come forward. No, please do. Come forward, state your name and your affiliation for the record. Right there. Thank you.
My name is Mike Mann, commercial fisherman, Juneau, Alaska, ex-board member of NIPAC. And just the last few comments about hatcheries and the government helping out, the state government helping out DIPAC. In those days, I wanted you to know, without the state government, DIPAC would have been closed. And we, as commercial fishermen, would have lost another 25 or 30% of our catch last year because of DIPAC's success and it returns. So I'm in support of this 1%. The only question I have is, where's the money going to go? And I'd really like to see it go to the state. I'd like to see the state do things that in 1975, when we were doing limited entry back then, one of the problems that was happening at that point was we didn't have a buyback program, and we needed that in order to get limited entry to go through the federal government and allowing, you know, individuals to have permits at that point. I'd like to see that funds be used, part of it at least be used for something like that, because that seems to help in a way the Department of Fish and Game kind of relates on who's catching and what's catching fish, that kind of stuff, and predominantly like what's going on up in Cook Inlet. I only fished up there for about 20 years, and only 5 or 8 years in Bristol Bay, a few down south, and you know, stuff like that. I've only been fishing around for a while, and knowing that our contributing of taxable income to the communities like Haynes, where Bill's from over here, that it really does help out. But that's the one thing I would like to see, is that, you know, or have the state answer the problem for having a buyback program by having that taxable income by commercial fishermen to fund something like that. But at least, you know, it would be an answer that as we as commercial fishermen can have to adjust things. And basically that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Any questions? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to come forward and testify? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The individual, Walt Pasternak from Sitka, he listed all the taxes that he has to pay, local, state, etc. Could your office get a hold of him and get that breakdown so we could see what an individual fisherman pays according to him? I'd like to see how much that is.
We'd be happy to do that. Thank you. Representative Herron. Are there any other comments from this committee? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Maybe just a follow-up based on Ms. Nero's testimony. And one concern I've often heard is, you know, a lot of people, you know, we want to put skin in the game. We appreciate we've all got to hurt. We've got to share this burden. I think there's a lot of concern, though, at least just conversations I've had and emails I've received that, you know, the sort of piecemeal approach, you know, what if we get saddled with this, but we end up being the only ones. And I think Representative Johnson's comments I think are really important and helpful. And I think that's a really important process note that I'm glad was put on the record today, and hopefully sort of assuages some concern, because I think it's, I have to say, I was concerned also myself and have been. So I think that's important.
Thank you. And along those lines, I myself have some reservations about passing this bill out of committee. I feel other industry bills that are being reviewed in the legislature are faltering, and I believe that all resources should pay their fair share, but I don't want to see the fishing industry be the only one that's subject to a tax increase. Consequently, this bill is going to be held in committee. Until an undetermined time, until I feel comfortable that the fishing industry, in fact, is not being singled out, and that there will be, as Representative Johnson explained earlier, maybe a package of bills that will go forward. Please feel assured that all of your comments are being heard. They will all be passed forward to the Finance Committee. And in the meantime, I would like this committee to kind of assimilate and digest what they've heard, and any recommendations that you might have, please pass them on to either myself or my committee aide, Reed, so we can compile a list of committee recommendations that we also pass forward. So this bill will be held, and so there will be further opportunity for people to testify. We will not be having a meeting on Thursday of this week. And if there's no other comments and no other business, Mr. Alper, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the record, Ken Alper, Director of the Tax Division, Department of Revenue. I just wanted to draw yours and the committee's attention to a document that we transmitted to your office the other day. It came up in conversation at the last hearing about it creates a framework to sort of plug in different tax rates for the different categories of the fishery. The 3% rate that more or less is all the onshore fisheries, the 4.5% rate that one person testified might be very high is really the canned fishery, the 5% offshore floater rate, and the 1% developing. So that's an Excel spreadsheet. It's very user-friendly. It's on the Internet. Individuals and the public can look at it now. And if you wanted to plug in different tax rates to try to create a desired level of revenue for alternative versions of the bill, you now have that available to you. I just wanted to put that before on the record that you submitted that to the committee.
I appreciate that, as we all do. And this information is also available on BASIS. So we do appreciate that. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none and having no further business coming before this committee, we will adjourn at 11 o'clock.